Du lytter til Radio 24/7.
Danmarks nyheds- og debatradio.
Hør os live eller on demand på radio247.dk. Velkommen til Elektronista med Christiane Vejlø.
I'm Phil Libin, CEO of Evernote, and you're listening to Electronista.
Hi, this is Guy Kawasaki, and you're listening to Electronista.
This is Robert Scoble, and you're listening to Electronista.
I dag er Electronista taget til Paris, og det er vi fordi, at lige nu der løber en kæmpe internetkonference af stablen lige her i Paris. Det er det, der hedder Le Web. Og det er det sted, hvor folk mødes, hvis man vil holde øje med internettrends, de hotteste talere inden for den her branche, og så i det hele taget bare networke og møde andre, der arbejder inden for det digitale kulturområde. Jeg bor lige her i nærheden af hotellet, hvilket i øvrigt betyder, at jeg bor meget, meget langt fra den centrale del af Paris. Jeg kan se Sacré-Cœur fra mit hotelværelse, men ellers er der ikke så meget af det. Den mere eksklusive del af Paris for mig at opleve. Men det gør ikke så meget, for det fantastiske, det er jo alt det, der sker på den her konference, hvor jeg kan gå til. Der er ikke mere end par hundrede meter derhen. Når man kommer hen til konferencen, så er det jo selvfølgelig et stort sted. Ikke lige så stort som det, jeg plejer at kende fra USA, men det er et stort sted med en masse folk, der er meget entusiastiske omkring det her område. Og en af dem, som også er rigtig entusiastisk, og som har været her hele tre gange, det er min gæst i dag, Morten Saxnes. Du er digital brandingchef på TV2. Mit navn er Christiane Vejlø, og du lytter til Elektronista.
Please welcome back Loïc Lemaire.
I love the German accent of Marco. Marco Kaiser is a great friend and we've been working together for years. And I love that he does the welcome Loïc Lemaire. We have a lot of accents on stage. We'll try next year to do.
Ja, nu var jeg selv med for første gang for nu er det 10. år det kører. Jeg tror jeg med første gang for 8 år siden, hvor vi sad i et godt nok et andet lokale, der var pivkoldt, og maden var ringe, der var ikke nok mad, og internettet var dårligt, og alt beklagede sig. Så når man prøvede at få sit Twitter-feed til at køre, så kunne man se, at folk brokkes over, der ikke var noget internet. Og det er jo nået så langt mere nu. De kommer så bredt ud, og det er så høj kvalitet. Altså. Alt dufter bare kvalitet.
Ja, og selv maden. Og på den måde er det jo meget fransk. Altså, når jeg tager til Consumer Electronics Show i Las Vegas, så får man en eller anden sur sandwich inde i et presserum. Her der får man simpelthen foie gras og små haps og lækker laks og vin til maden.
Ja, du kan få lokal rødvin. Det er meget dejligt. Så de lever virkelig den her parisiske ånd. Og det kan man se. Loïc, som er herfra, jamen, han gør meget ud af at også sælge Paris og sælge Frankrig som land. Så han er en fantastisk ambassadør for landet også.
Ja, det må man sige, at mange af talerne, de lover, at de kommer tilbage næste år, fordi deres kone gerne vil hertil. Og det bliver jeg jo en lille smule provokeret af, fordi indtil videre har jeg faktisk ikke set den eneste kvinde på scenen. Så jeg synes jo egentlig også, at den burde være omvendt. Altså, har du tænkt over det, at der faktisk ikke har været nogen kvinder på scenen? Jeg har i hvert fald ikke nogen af de sessions, jeg har set, har jeg lagt mærke til nogen.
Nej, men det, jeg har tænkt over, det er, at kvinder og tech er blevet bragt op mange gange som et begreb. Der var en forsker, der var inde og skulle spå omkring fremtiden, og sagde, hvad er det for nogle vigtigste elementer, man skal have i fremtiden, hvor han havde sat kvinder på dagsordenen. Altså det med, at de skal ind i teknologien, at vi skal bruge dem, det mangler i den grad. Så det er noget, der bliver snakket om, og det er noget, der bliver efterspurgt. Men vi er ikke helt nået der endnu.
Jeg tror også, der er en ret stor velvilje, men det kræver stadigvæk, at når man sidder og skal hyre en person til sin virksomhed, jamen, så skal man kigge lidt længere end Old Boys Network. Altså man skal simpelthen gå ud, og altså, de findes derude, kvinderne. Det kan godt være, at det kræver lidt mere arbejde end at lave en hurtig LinkedIn-statusopdatering, men de findes derude, og hvis man har velviljen, jamen, så må man også gøre arbejdet, og så man sørger for at få trukket kvinder ind. For sådan som det er lige nu, så er der en skævvridning, og den bliver vi nødt til at skubbe lidt på, så vi kan komme derhen, hvor det ligesom ikke betyder noget mere.
Ja, jeg er meget enig. Nu går jeg ikke ind for, at man laver sådan en forced migration, hvor man skal presse dem ind. Jeg mener, at de skal finde sin naturlige berettigelse i virksomheden, men når man så har arbejdet med og mødt kvinder, der er i startup-verdenen, så de giver noget andet. De har nogle andre perspektiver, og det skal bare bringes længere frem. Og det er det, vi ser også her på konferencen, at det bliver bragt frem. Det er noget, vi snakker om, og vi er ikke længere bange for at italesætte det. Det er ikke et tabu længere. Nu er vi accepteret, at der er et underskud af kvinder. Så lad os få snakket om det, hvordan vi kan gøre noget ved det.
Ja, man kan sige, at kvinder er jo ikke ligefrem en niche. Det er jo halvdelen af befolkningen, og det er jo også en branche, der mangler arbejdskraft i høj grad. Så der er rigtig mange grunde til at få kvinderne ind. Og lidt senere i dag, der kommer der simpelthen et panel, der handler om kvinder i teknologi, og det er jeg lidt spændt på at se, hvordan de vælger at gribe det an. Men Morten Saxnes, vi sidder jo her til web på anden sal i den store bygning. Vi sidder i nogle grønne stole lige ved en elevator, og cirka mellem bloggerrummet og presserummet. Og faktisk synes jeg egentlig, det er ret symptomatisk for, at jeg egentlig ikke føler mig så hjemme nogen af stederne. Jeg er lidt begge dele. Jeg er både presse, men jeg er også blogger, og vi synes alligevel, presserummet ville vi ikke sidde og lave radio, for der var folk helt stille. Så vi har fundet sådan et sted midt imellem. Men der befinder jeg mig egentlig meget godt. Hvad med dig?
Der er en meget åbenhed. Jeg ved ikke, om du har oplevet det?
Jo, helt klart. Det er meget et sted, hvor man kan gå hen og møde talerne, altså hvis man ser dem. I går, der var vi henne, både dig og mig, og snakke med Robert Scoble. Du var henne og prøve hans Google Glass, og jeg lavede et interview med ham. Han er jo en kæmpe internetpersonlighed, som vi også skal snakke om lige om lidt. Men det er simpelthen det, man kan her. Og hvis man igen skal drage en parallel til CES i Las Vegas, så er det så stort, og hver keynote er sådan stor en produktion, at man aldrig kommer i nærheden af dem, der taler. Og dem, der typisk taler, det er jo CEOs fra producenterne, altså Samsung og Qualcomm, og altså de helt store spillere. Og de er ikke nødvendigvis de sjoveste at snakke med heller, de her CEOs. Altså de er lidt nogle jakkesæt, der står og lirer et eller andet af. Og her kan man mærke, der er meget mere passion og mere sådan personlighedsbåret og folk, der brænder for tingene. Du lytter til Elektronister på Radio 24/7 med WeWe, fordi i dag der er vi i Paris. Vi er simpelthen rejst til Paris for at besøge webkonferencen Le Web. Mit navn er Christiane Vejlø, og jeg sidder med Morten Saxnes, som er digital brandingchef hos TV2. Og Morten, det som vi skal snakke om nu, det er nogle af de mennesker, som vi så på scenen i går, og det er altså nogle af de absolut største stjerner inden for den her branche i virkeligheden. Og jeg synes godt, man kan sige stjerner, fordi selv når man ser dem sådan gå rundt, så kan man næsten se folk være sådan lidt starstruck. Altså, jeg har set flere, som skulle have autografer, altså godt nok i bøger, men der er bare lidt af det samme, som når man møder sit idol eller en rockstjerne. Altså, har du også lagt mærke til det?
Men altså, nu er jeg jo selv bidt af den her internetverden, så i den grad, når jeg ser de folk gå rundt, så kan jeg godt mærke, at så stiger pulsen en lille smule. Nu nævnte du selv Robert Scoble i går. Ham har jeg mødt tidligere, da jeg arbejdede i USA, og han har altid været sådan en ikon for mig. Han har været first mover inden for teknologi, har været med til at drive branchen, social media branchen, blogger branchen. Så når man ser ham, så er det både sådan en dejlig æresfrygt. Altså, jeg skylder ham rigtig meget. Jeg har læst hans blog altid. Det var ham, der fik mig på Twitter i sin tid. Så når man ser ham rende rundt med et par Google Glass, jamen så bliver man glad, og man føler, man er tæt på et idol.
Robert Scoble er en af dem, som jeg interviewede i går. Jeg har også haft fat i Guy Kawasaki, som rigtig mange kender, fordi han altså har over 1 million followers på Twitter, og i det hele taget bare en kæmpe internetpersonlighed. Jeg har talt med CEO'en fra Evernote, som er en note-app, som rigtig mange af os bruger. Og så har jeg også haft en rigtig god snak med Om Malik, som er den fyr, der startede den meget populære tech-blog, der hedder GigaOm. Så det er dem, som vi skal kigge lidt på nu, og også høre de interviews, som jeg har lavet med dem. Morten, den første, jeg snakkede med i går, det var Phil Lippen. Og han er måske ikke sådan et navn, man lige kender, men der er bare virkelig mange, der kender hans app, og det er den, der hedder Evernote. Nu synes jeg, vi skal høre den lille snak, som jeg havde med Phil Lippen, CEO fra Evernote, i går.
I also use Evernote for notes and to keep track of some things that I don't want to forget, but I don't pay for this service. How do you earn money on it?
Well, the old-fashioned way. We our whole business model is very direct. So we only make money when we give you a product that you love so much that you want to pay us for it. And we reject all indirect revenue. So we don't make any money on advertising. We don't monetize your data in any way. We never look at what you put into Evernote. It's all private. We're not a big data company. We don't do affiliate. We just earn money when we give people products that they want to pay for. And our philosophy is that it's more important that you stay than that you pay. So it's more important for us that you use Evernote and you keep coming back to it and you use it, you know, month after month after month for years. And if you really like the products, it's our responsibility to make something that you'll want to pay for. And so we're happy that people use it, that people use it for free. Sooner or later, we'll come out with a product that our free users will say, oh, I can really use that, and then they'll pay for it.
So you have a premium product. What could convince me to jump up and actually start paying for your premium product?
Well, we have a premium subscription of Evernote, which has lots of cool features, and we're actually adding new ones all the time. So, for example, the premium version has this beautiful presentation mode. So, if you keep a lot of information with Evernote and you have to do presentations, you can now do it directly from Evernote, a really beautiful way to do presentations. You can, for example, have offline notebooks on your phone or tablet. So, if you're on an airplane, you don't have network access. If you're a premium user, you can still have access to all of your notes. There's lots of other features, and every couple of months we introduce new premium-only features, but we specifically don't push very much because the goal of the free version is not to get you to pay. The free version isn't meant to be limited. It's not meant to be a trial or a teaser. The goal of the free version is to earn your confidence and get you to use it and keep coming back, and so we want it to be a full-featured version. And what we see is the longer people use it, the more likely they are to pay. And so what we started out with is just having this premium subscription, but now we have many other products. We have physical products that you could buy. We have business products, and so as long as you're using it and you fall in love with a brand and the product, there's lots of things that you can buy in time.
What are some examples of your other revenue streams?
Well, we have three right now. So the first one was the freemium, and then just about a year ago, I think exactly a year ago, on stage at La Web, we launched Evernote Business, which is our business version of our software. We found that almost everyone uses Evernote professionally. Our users are people who don't have a firm distinction between work and home. They use it for everything. And so we wanted to make a specific version that you can use, that companies could buy. And so there's a version for companies that, that is just sold directly. And then 2 months ago, we launched Evernote Market, which is our collection of physical products. So we traveled the world and we found really amazing designers and manufacturers, and we work with them to create your beautiful new physical products that are, that each product solves a specific problem through design and is a smarter way to do something. And we've only been selling those for a couple of months, and it's already 30% of our revenue. So the physical products are doing really well.
So what's the point in you as a digital company actually moving into this analog world? I've also seen you've done a partnership with Moleskine around a notebook, like an actual physical notebook, and then you have a partnership with Post-it Notes that you talked about today. What's the point of you starting to work with Post-it Notes? It's a totally old-fashioned concept.
Well, I think I don't think we're a digital company. We thought we were in the beginning. You know, we had, I think, this typical kind of Silicon Valley digital company idea that, that our, you know, our goal was to kill paper. Like, we don't want anyone taking notes on paper. It doesn't make any sense. You know, you should be doing digitally. But then we realized that this was just dishonest because a lot of people just love the experience of analog products. In fact, almost everyone loves physical products to some extent. If you go to a meeting at Evernote with Evernote employees, about half the people are taking notes on paper in a notebook. And so we realized that this was just an arrogance on our part. It was an arrogance that dismissed the real world as being less important, where of course the real world is important. It's much more important than digital stuff. And so we realized that what's really important are the overall experiences. So we want to make great experiences in our products. And so those experiences should combine physical aspects and digital aspects. And so we started working with really what we considered hero companies, like Moleskine, Post-it. Post-it Pad, to me, is like a, it's a hero product. It is the simplest, most versatile designed productivity product ever. And we started working with these companies to give a digital life to these traditional physical products. And that was the spark of the idea. And from there, we went on to do much more. But I think the best experiences are created when physical and digital are designed with the same vision by the same team.
So this is the end of 2013, and we're moving into 2014. Phil Lippin, what do you think will be the most important trends that we should keep our eyes out for in 2014?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to predict 1 year in advance. It's easier to do 5 years than one. I think,
and much more easy to do five than ten. Then,
I think so. You know, I think the two most important things that we're investing in, the two most important trends that we're investing in, is the first one is we think that the distinction between physical and digital will continue to fade. I think really beautiful products will be created that have a physical component and a digital component. In fact, I think this whole idea of the distinction between hardware and software is an artificial idea that only came about 20 years ago. And I think it's going to disappear in the next 5 years. And so we're investing a lot in this idea that we want to have be able to design things that have a digital component and a physical component. And the second major thing that we're designing for is I think that the line between personal and work is also really disappearing very quickly. And so everything we're doing is meant to appeal to individual people, but they're the kinds of people who typically have good jobs, and so they want to make the same decisions in their personal lives as they do in their work lives. Those are our 2 5-year investment hypotheses, that the physical and digital is merging and work and personal are merging, and our products are really meant to reflect that.
I also heard you talking about love. What's the point of love when marketing a product?
Well, I think traditionally, I think business has been about scarcity. Like most things, like I think the reason that business was invented as a concept was a way to deal with the scarcity of products. You know, if you think back 100 years ago or, you know, 1,000 years ago, everything was scarce. It was only, you know, a certain amount of products. And so business was there to distribute scarce products in some way. And I think for many industries, they're still driven by scarcity. So if you're in, you know, mineral extraction, I mean, that's still a very scarcity-based industry. But for a lot of industries, for things in the cloud, for things that are digital, there's really no natural scarcity. And so you just can't use scarcity as a traditional way to think about economics, to think about marketing, to think about business. And I think for many industries, what is the motivation that used to be scarcity is being replaced by affinity, by love, by what are the best experiences that you can have? What are you loyal to? What do you love? And that's really what motivates most value in these new economies. And it's really where we operate. So if you look at the overall world economy, you know, what percent is scarcity-based and what percent is love-based, I think right now it's probably still 95% scarcity. But that's 5% that's love-based is a really interesting thing to be. And if you look at things like the web and the companies that are here, I think most of us are actually in that magic 5%.
So what's the most crazy idea that you would have with working with Evernote, or what the projects you would want to work with in the future?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of crazy ideas, you know, thousands. And so it's one of the hardest things is to take the 10,000 things that we want to do in a year and, you know, limit it, work down from 1,000 things to, you know, the 2 or 3 things that we're actually going to do. So I'm always very careful not to talk too much about the crazy ideas because I know realistically that we're only going to get to 2 or 3, but I think a lot of people thought that the physical products were kind of crazy. It was unexpected. People thought, you know, why would I want to buy a bag or a scanner or a stylus from Evernote? And I was kind of worried myself, to be honest with you. I really believed in it, and we worked on it very hard to make these products because these aren't existing products we just stuck our logo on. These are really carefully created. And the day before we launched, about 2 months ago, the day before we launched, I was really worried that no one would buy anything. And I thought, I'm going to, you know, my investors are going to be really angry. And I took this company into this project, which was very expensive and very long. And who the hell is going to buy it? And I'm going to look like an idiot. And then 2 months later, my biggest problem is we just can't keep enough things in stock. Everything is sold out, and we have to deal with suppliers. And a lot of these things that seem crazy, you know, have turned out pretty well.
So some of the stuff you're doing, producing physical products, seem to be sort of on the edge of your digital product. It's the merger between the physical and the digital world. But there's one project that I know that you have an idea around. You want to bring back an extinct animal. What's up with that? Tell me about that.
Yes, well, that's not an Evernote thing. That has nothing to do with Evernote. That's a personal project that I just recently got involved with. With an organization that's aiming to create de-extinction. So there's animals that people have made extinct that are extinct because of us. And I think it would be really terribly elegant and morally correct if we can also help bring them back. So there is work underway to bring back passenger pigeons and woolly mammoths and other species that we've made extinct. And I just think it's totally serious. Like, it's going to happen. I really believe in it. And it's going to happen fairly soon.
So how do you recreate a mammoth that doesn't exist anymore?
Well, you find some mammoth DNA. Luckily, there's a lot of it, you know, frozen and in very good shape. And they're close enough. The DNA is close enough to elephants where through some manipulation, you can basically cause an elephant that's alive right now to give birth to something that's going to be a 100% mammoth. And it'll take 100 years to repopulate mammoths into the wild. It's about a 20-year period from when they're born to when they're old enough to have offspring. So a few years from now, there'll be a woolly mammoth baby in the world. And then 20 years from now, or, you know, 23, 25 years from now, there's going to be the second generation of woolly mammoths, and then we'll start repopulating into the wild. And 100 years from now, there'll be herds of woolly mammoths in Siberia and places where there used to be.
And crazy Jurassic Park things happening, do you think?
You know, I hope so. I think, you know, the popular media portrayal is always going to be more dramatic. But yeah, no, I think it's a really, I think it's a beautifully elegant idea of what people can achieve to show that that even the damage caused by technology isn't irreversible. And we have this spark, we have this human potential to really save things. I just think it's a beautiful concept, and has absolutely nothing to do with the company, of course. But it's something that I just found out about, and happy to play a very small part in.
I want to thank you very much for participating in Electronista. I have been talking to Phil Libin from Evernote, where he is CEO.
I'm Phil Libin, CEO of Evernote, and you're listening to Electronista.
Hi, this is Guy Kawasaki, and you're listening to Electronista.
This is Robert Scoble, and you're listening to Electronista.
I dag er vi taget på en lille ekskursion. Vi er nemlig i Paris, hvor der lige nu er en stor internetkonference, som hedder Le Web. Jeg hedder Christiane Vejlø, og jeg sidder sammen med Morten Saxnes, som er digital branding chef hos TV2. Og Morten, vi snakker jo lidt om nogle af de mennesker, som jeg var så heldig at fange i går til et interview, og det er jo absolut topstjerner inden for den her branche, altså store personligheder for internettet. Mange af dem, eller de fleste af dem, har faktisk været på scenen også at tale til den her konference. En af dem, som også har været sådan lidt en ordstyrende person, panelstyrer, det er ham, der hedder Om Malik. Og han er jo personen bag den blog, der hedder GigaOm, som er en af de mest afgørende tech-blogs på verdensplan, er det jo nok i virkeligheden for mange af de amerikanske tech-blogs. Det er jo dem, som alle os andre også læser. Der er 500.000, der læser den blog hver måned. Er det en blog, du også holder lidt øje med?
Ja, det er det. I den grad. Jeg har ligesom en fast rutine med nogle blogs, man skal igennem for at kunne følge lidt med. Og der er GigaOm en, jeg har fulgt i mange år nu, og også fulgt Omaliks udvikling. Han har altid været en internetpersonlighed, men man er nu en kæmpe, altså en stjerne inden for det her. Og som du selv sagde, det er en, man gerne vil have fat i. Hvis man skal ud med et produkt, jamen, så skal man have fat i ham, og forhåbentlig få en god anmeldelse ud af ham. Så er du er ikke sikret succes, men du er i hvert fald godt på vej.
Om Malik fortalte mig faktisk, at han var på vej til Danmark. Han er meget madinteresseret, så han skulle spise på Noma og på Geist i København. Så det fik vi også selvfølgelig en lille snak om, men det er klart, vi snakkede altså primært om teknologi. Vi havde en stor snak om hele det her servicebegreb, og hvor vigtigt det simpelthen er på internettet. Men jeg synes, vi skal tage og høre et par bidder fra interviewet med Om Malik fra GigaOm.
What do you think of a conference like Le Web?
You know, it's always fun to come back to Le Web to kind of get an idea of what Europe is doing and how Europe is thinking about startups and technology.
Is it very different, the European approach to startups, than Silicon Valley, where you come from?
I find that the audacity of ambition is a little bit more limited in Europe than it is in the United States. And, you know, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I just think it's different. And whereas U.S. companies always start with the notion of global domination, the European startups start with serving the needs of their local customers first. And I think that's a mindset which is slightly different. So I think talent is a huge issue in Europe because, you know, all the people in U.S. and San Francisco Bay Area attract so many technology people that they have literally hundreds and thousands of people doing similar kind of things. So you have a much bigger talent pool to pick your next employee from. Europe is a little bit limited in that. And I think if there was any piece of advice I have for the governments and to other founders, is to actually develop the whole size and scope of the employee and the future, you know, talent base. And I don't think it's an easy thing to do on day one, but it's something which needs to be done, in my opinion.
This week I actually went to a meeting invited by two ministers in Copenhagen. They invited a crowd of people to give them advice on how the digital future of Denmark should be, what kind of IT nation we should be. What do you think is important for countries right now when creating the digital future for society and for business?
So I actually have written about it many times. I feel a lot of people like to be Silicon Valley, and I don't think that makes any sense. Countries need to, or cities need to start from their position of strength. So for instance, you know, Paris and New York and should be thinking about how they become the hub for commerce and fashion and lifestyle-oriented companies, right? Because that's the core strength of that economy, right? So if you're in Denmark, where would you start? You would start with the idea of what the idea of a product and design looks like in the 21st century, where we make much fewer physical objects and we make much more, you know, digital objects. We make 3D related objects, right? So if you're going to think about the future, if that's where the direction is going and that's your God-given gift, design, the Danish design we all know is pretty amazing. If that's what you're going to focus on, take that and focus on that and just think, how will you adapt it for this new digitized world? You know, there should be courses in Denmark teaching people how to design 3D objects in a world where there is 3D printing. So when I think about, you know, countries, I think about, like, find your position of natural strength, find things you can grow and scale, and then think in those terms.
So right now we're at Le Web in Paris. This is where a lot of technological minds get together to talk about the trends of the internet and technology. What do you see as some really important trends that we should focus on in the following couple of years?
So, you know, I think there isn't like this one trend or two trends which you can focus on. I think there is one bigger trend which is at work, which is that we are seeing, and I like to call it, we are adding a digital heartbeat to everything, right? And I think that's the big trend. So, I mean, we are thinking about a connection inside a watch and in a thermostat and in, you know, in vacuum cleaners. And so, you know, people look at all these things and they just say, wow, you know, it's Internet of Things. And yes, but what it is it's an Internet of Connections, right? It's more connections, it's more connectedness. That is the big trend, and it is the most important trend. The more things are connected, the more useful they become, the more things you can do with that trend. So I think that's the big trend. I think there is other some micro trends within this mega trend, which I like to see. It's like we are seeing the rise of 3D printing is becoming a major force, not necessarily as a replacement for manufacturing, but as an augmentation to the current manufacturing. And so I think we are in like many years cycle of change from that standpoint. I think you're going to see many more robots in our life, but we always think of robot and we think of R2-D2. It's not really what I am talking about. I'm talking about little machines which help us do what we do better, right? And there is a bigger challenge which comes with this ongoing digitization, that as a society we are challenged with this, with the reality is like there is going to be a big portion of society which will be looking for new job opportunities because we are bringing such massive automation and digitization. So I think those are the big trends of the future. I think a lot of people would not like to talk about the challenges facing us because it's not the convenient thing to talk about. But the way I see it is if we talk about it, we will have not be hysterical about it. I said, we talk about it, engage with it, and like look at the problem and see how we can solve it. Like the way I was saying is that you can, you know, Denmark can produce 1,000 designers every year and they will all be taken up as long as they are designing products the market wants, not products which might become irrelevant, right? I mean, you can buy as much furniture from Denmark as you can, but there's only so much you can do with that, right? But like you can't like, how do you build a global scale, you know, or you have a global, you know, continued global impression is by building things for the future. And I think that's why it's time to start thinking about these issues and taking a more nuanced and more thoughtful approach to fixing them. Not just, I think a lot of people get hysterical about it, and I think that's not the answer either.
One of the things that I'm really noticing is this trend of creating convenience and extra service. Again, it was something that Uber was talking about today. Uber is actually providing a service we might not have known that we really needed. We couldn't get a taxi. Well, you can get an even better car. It's going to cost you a little more, but it's going to be there when you need it. And this kind of service you can apply to many things on the internet and many products, that you can actually have this extreme service as a trend. Have you noticed this, and how do you feel about right. And also making things more humanist, like meeting the human needs?
I think, you know, I'm really surprised that you asked that question, because the extreme service as a concept is not anything new. You know, if you go to a good, you know, a store in like, if you go to a high-end store in London, or you go to like a, you know, shoe retailer in Paris or someplace, and you will see that they have created like a lifelong bond. They know what you want. They go extra mile to take care of your needs, and that's extreme service. And I think that has been there forever. I think on the internet, it's a new concept.
Exactly. I was going to say the internet hasn't really had a tradition to provide this service.
I think we have this wrong, or rather, this notion in tech that what we do is something spectacular, but in the real world it's been done before. Just because, you know, we as an industry haven't done it, we assume that it hasn't been done before. That's not the case, you know. All the things which have happened have been tried before, and occasionally new things come up. So
plus, the world is so transparent that if you're not providing a great service, someone's going to notice, and now they have the channels to tell you and tell the rest of the world.
I think the extreme service is the only way to stand out, right? Like, you see tens of thousands of startups being created every year. How are you going to stand out? You can't stand out if you don't really have something special. Like this, what is your, I like to call this your minimum viable unit of happiness, right? If you're a consumer company, you're like Instagram, right? What made Instagram so cool was a lot of things. But what really made it work was that the minute you took a photo and you hit send, and it just seemed like it was on the web, and likes started coming instantly, right? So that made you happy. So you wanted to do more of it. In Uber, if the car comes in less than 5 minutes, you are so happy, right? But if it doesn't come in 5 minutes, you're like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? I hate them. It's like, that's what it really is. And the minute you find out that minimum viable unit of happiness, you have a product which people want. And I think that's the key thing of success. A lot of startups would need to learn that reality is that it doesn't matter how much money you have, it doesn't matter how famous a founder you are, if you don't know how to make your users happy, whether they're corporate clients, whether they're, you know, people ordering cars, or they're people ordering food, it is all irrelevant. Like, you have to make people happy. And I think that's the key thing. That's the only difference I find in successful companies and not just successful companies. It's not the money. It's that knowing what makes people happy.
I think that's a great time to end the interview, that it's all about making people happy and not so much motivated by the money. Thank you so much, Omar Malik. I will let you continue your walks around Le Web here in Paris and your talks on stage. Before I let you go completely, can you recommend an app that makes you happy right now?
I still love Instagram, and I use it every day, and I find it something that is just perfect for me. It's like part of my life, and I'm glad it is.
So if you want to follow you on Instagram, what's your name?
Just Om. It's like at home on Instagram and on Twitter. So
you're fast on Instagram to get home.
Yeah, well, there's not that many people with that name, right? So that also helps.
Thank you very much, Om.
Thank you.
Du lytter lige nu til Elektronista på Radio 24/7. Mit navn er Christiane Vejlø, og jeg er taget til konferencen Le Web i Paris. Det er en virkelig god teknologikonference, hvor kvaliteten af talere er rigtig høj. Jeg sidder sammen med Morten Saxnes fra TV2, rutineret rotte ud i Le Web-konferencen. Morten, du har været her 3 gange. Hvordan har du det, når man kommer ind i salen? Altså, for jeg synes jo faktisk, det er en fantastisk flot produceret show, de kører her.
Ja, Le Web har udviklet sig rigtig meget, og det er virkelig en af de konferencer, der har allerhøjst kvalitet. Du nævnte selv før, hele showet på salen, eller på scenen, det kører helt tæt oppe med bloggerne, der sidder i siderne med deres computer og sidder og live-caster hele det her. Det er jo, der er sådan en fantastisk vibe. Derudover så er der jo kamera på, som streamer til nettet direkte. Det bliver også lagt op på YouTube, men dem, der sidder derude, ser, der sidder tusindvis af mennesker på nettet lige i øjeblikket og følger med live også, gratis. Så de gør alt, hvad de kan for at komme ud. Så hele setupet omkring Le Web er så digitalt og handler om deling. Og det kommer langt ud, hvis du har fulgt, du følger med på Twitter lige i øjeblikket. Jeg kan se, hvor mange folk, der live-tweeter omkring det her. Du gør det selv. Det er en ekstrem eksponering, Le Web har i de her dage.
Jeg synes, det er så fantastisk at være et sted, hvor man føler sig meget indfødt. Altså, hvor man ligesom føler, her er alle bare ligesom med den store forståelse for, hvordan det digitale liv er. Altså, det er fedt at sidde og se alle de seneste Instagram-billeder op på live-skærmen ved siden af store skærmsbillederne af dem, der er på scenen. Og det er fedt at se, at hele salen sidder med deres tastaturer og deres iPads, og der er lysende skærme over hele den her kæmpe store sal, og det er bare helt okay, fordi det er sådan, vi er. Den næste ud af det firkløver, som jeg fik talt med i går, det er Guy Kawasaki. Han var også på scenen på et tidspunkt. Han er jo den her hawaiianske, tror jeg. Jeg ved ikke, om det hedder det, men han er fra Hawaii oprindeligt i hvert fald. Og han er faktisk fra 54, så han er ikke en helt ung fyr. Han har været i gamet virkelig lang tid. Og han sidder meget tilbagelænet på scenen, og han er også kendt for at være sådan lidt provokerende og måske endda lidt arrogant. Morten Saxnes, hvordan oplevede du Guy Kawasaki på scenen?
Han har altid været en person, der deler vandene i alt, hvad han gør. Både de virksomheder, han investerer i hans tilstedeværelse på sociale medier, hvor han jo er kæmpestor. Han har en baggrund, hvor han har arbejdet for Apple som evangelist. Så han lever under den her Silicon Valley-ånd med startup-verdenen. Han spytter enormt mange penge i virksomheder og hjælper virksomheder med at komme i gang. Små startup-virksomheder han med i. Men det, jeg synes, er interessant, det er hans måde. Nu nævnte jeg før det omkring hans tilstedeværelse på sociale medier. Blandt os, der arbejder med sociale medier, der er vi altid sådan, man skal huske at være troværdig, og man skal lave ting selv. Han har været med til at bryde nogle af de normer ved at ansætte folk, der sidder og skriver for ham. Det vil sige, er med til at skabe hans tilstedeværelse. Og det er der mange, der løfter øjenbrynene, når han siger det.
Men jeg synes jo selv, han var netop inde på at sige, Guy Kawasaki er mit brand, det er min virksomhed. Inden under den paraply, der har han en blog, hvor der er andre folk, der skriver blogposts også. De poster på hans Twitter-konto, hvor han har over 1 million followers, så vidt jeg husker. Og så sagde han så også i går, at han faktisk poster 4 gange om dagen det samme post med 8 timers mellemrum, som jo er et virkelig no-no i mange kredse. Men han siger, at der er ingen, der sidder og kigger på deres feed 24 timer i døgnet. Og det giver 4 gange så mange kliks. Så vil I ikke også gøre det. Gå nu bare ud og gør det, ikke?
Han er forretningsmand, og han forstår at bruge sociale medier som markedsplads. Mange har et meget sådan religiøst forhold til sociale medier, at man skal bruge det på den og den måde. Men han udfordrer rammerne og siger, men prøv at, jeg kan skabe følgere, og jeg kan skabe momentum, og jeg kan sælge igennem de her platforme. Og det kan han. Så der er noget om snakken. Der er bare et eller andet over ham.
Jeg havde en god snak med ham, den var ikke så lang. Han stod og skulle videre til en masse andre interviews, og han var i gang med at give autografer, og det kan godt blive lidt hektisk sådan noget. Så det vi gør faktisk, det er, at vi har lagt interviewet ud i en lang hale af hele det her Best of Tech Stars, og den kan man simpelthen finde som podcast inde på Radio 24/7's hjemmeside. Guy Kawasaki fortalte mig, at hans kone var dansk, og at hans yndlingsapp var Trip.it, fordi han simpelthen rejser så meget. Den sidste fyr, som jeg nåede at fange i går, inden dagen den var omme, det var Robert Scoble.
Og han er jo altså virkelig om nogen en stjerne. Ikke mindst fordi han helt vildt meget ligner Philip Seymour Hoffman, skuespilleren, som jeg tror, der er rigtig mange, der faktisk har taget fejl af de to. Jeg ved ikke, om der har været den anden vej rundt også, men han er en tekststjerne, som også ligner en filmstjerne, så det kan jo ikke gå helt galt. Og Morten, du gik hen til ham i går og spurgte ham om noget, som han fortalte, at han var blevet spurgt om utrolig mange gange. Hvad var det, det var?
Jamen det var, han er jo indbegrebet af tech, og han rendte rundt med et par Google Glass. Det vil sige de her briller, som Google har udviklet, som gør, at man kan lægge det her digitale lag på virkeligheden. Jeg ved ikke, om du har omtalt dem før, men det er en af de former for teknologi, som jeg kan lægge vågen om natten, som jeg elsker at snakke om, og som inspirerer mig dybt i forhold til, hvordan kommer det til at ændre verden. Jeg har ikke selv fået lov til at prøve dem, og så står han med dem i går, så jeg var nødt til at gå hen og sige hej til ham. Jeg har mødt ham et par gange før, og så spurgte jeg, om jeg måtte låne hans briller og fik dem på, og det var jo næsten sådan et magisk øjeblik, hvor man fik lov til at ikke bare prøve Google Glass, men simpelthen Robert Scoble's Google Glass. Det var ret stort.
Morten Saxnes, du snakkede før om, at Guy Kawasaki var tidligere Apple-evangelist, og Robert Scoble er jo tidligere Microsoft-evangelist. Hvad er det, det betyder, det her med at være evangelist? Altså, det er jo noget med at sprede budskabet om det her branding.
Jamen, det er det, og det er en titel, som er måske en smule outdated, men med mange af de her store virksomheder, de hiver store internetpersonligheder ind, som kender branchen, og som kan gå ud og fortælle historien, og gå ud og ligesom, ja, sprede det gode budskab omkring denne virksomhed på en troværdig måde. Ja, og der siger du, ja, Scoble, Guy Kawasaki, de er helt sikkert nogle af de største.
Robert Scoble er ikke længere Microsoft-evangelist, men han er jo en internetpersonlighed med en blog og en hel masse social media followers. Han arbejder for en virksomhed, der hedder Rackspace, og specifikt med et projekt, som hedder Building 43. Nu skal vi altså høre lidt fra min samtale med Robert Scoble i går.
From your perspective, what's really important right now and what should we be looking at in sort of the next few years?
Well, I wrote a book called Age of Context, so that's a little hint of where I would take it. And that's the combination of sensors, wearable computers, data, or we call it big data, but I hate that term, along with data from social networks and location networks like Foursquare or Waze. You join those five things together, and now you can make a new kind of software, a contextual software, something that knows what you're doing. And in fact, I know there's a team at Google working on building a contextual operating system that will know whether you're walking or running or in a meeting or driving or shopping, for sure. They certainly want to know when you're shopping, because then they can do things to serve you. And like the Google Glass that I'm wearing is the first gadget that knows where I'm aimed and where my eyes are looking. And so there's a new way for them to study intent with this. And there's new kinds of video games that they can make. I've already seen a game where aliens come from the sky and you shoot them just by looking at them. You know, it's sort of fun. It's different than playing a similar game on an iPhone or whatnot.
You're one of the first people to have the Google Glass, and you've been wearing it for how long?
7 months now. There's about 5,000 people that have them, I think, the prototypes. A lot of people who have them don't wear them because, for one, it doesn't do a whole lot yet. You know, it takes pictures and makes phone calls, you know, and the Facebook app doesn't work. The Twitter app is sort of, not very useful. And the second thing is everybody wants to try them on, so particularly at tech conferences. So my friend's like, I'll never wear them at a tech conference again, you know, because I got so many people that want to stop you and try them on. But I love that. So.
So still you are wearing them, and yeah. It's you're getting new friends from wearing them, it sounds like.
Yep.
But what kind of value do you find in this particular wearable technology?
Well, it's an always-on device that's an assistant that, like, when you walk into an airport, it shows you your gate number and your flight. And, yeah, your smartphone can do that too, but it's not on your face where you don't need to touch it. And so I can be dragging two suitcases, and I always have that information right in front of me. And then you can talk to it and, you know, get directions places or tweet or send an email or receive an email and see your email or
Could you take a picture of me right now?
Yeah. It's real easy. You can either touch it and take a picture. There's a little button on the top. Or I could turn it on and say, okay, glass, take a picture. And it just took a picture.
I could actually see it taking a picture inside your eye.
Yeah, you can. They really worked on making sure that there was a social behavior so that you could actually see that I'm touching it or talking to it, and you can see that I'm not paying attention to you anymore. I'm looking at the screen, and
you lifted your head. Why did you do that?
I like it not in my view all the time. Particularly when I'm trying to have a conversation with people. So
what do you think about the other wearable technology gadgets that we have out now? The things for the wrist. There are so many of these now.
I'll on stage tomorrow when I give my talk, I'm going to be wearing a Oakley ski goggle that has a wearable computer in it that shows you where on the mountain you are and how fast you're skiing and
altitude,
all sorts of fun stuff, right? About skiing. I'm going to have a Qualcomm watch as well, and that has a new touch screen, very low power screen, and that'll be an interesting trend. Who's going to win there? Let's be honest, everybody's waiting for Apple. If Apple does what the rumors are, my friends have seen the Apple Watch, which is a curved glass screen with a touch screen on it, and Apple just hired the Burberry CEO to run their retail. And
so what does that say about Apple's approach to the consumer market?
I think for the wearables, they know it's about fashion. It's about signaling to other people who you are, what you are. I mean, even with my Google Glass, I put a San Francisco 49ers sticker on it, right? I assume the Apple one's going to be beautiful, so it'll be interesting to see. And then the Google Glass is coming out next year, and it'll be interesting to see how many people take that and how good it is. Because right now it's still a prototype. It's it's $1,500, too expensive for normal people to buy. But let's say the cost comes down, it still doesn't do very much, you know. And we need. We need a real SDK that really lets you build stuff for the sensor platform that is here. And then you'll start seeing the software that comes out that, you know, some kid will say, oh, I can do this with it. But we need a year, I think, you know.
So some of this wearable technology makes it possible for us to share things on social media. And Robert Scoble, you are one of the people you're really active on social media, and you have a lot of followers. And have from the beginning, I think, of Twitter been one of the people with the most followers. Yeah. How have you managed to gain this big following?
Well, I was early. And when you're early, as a social network builds, as a network builds, doesn't even need to be a social network. But as a network builds, if you're early, you're part of the fabric, right? If you come in late after the fabric's been built, and then you want to inject yourself into that, that takes a lot more effort than just say, I'm here at the beginning and I'm part of the fabric that's being built out here. And so that's why I spent, you know, Google Plus, I spent so much time in the first 6 weeks, barely sleeping, you know, just doing as much as I could to not just put my own stuff out there, but to build a network with other people who were the early adopters, which is part of my job too and part of my life. And then that leads to building good content, and if you build good content, you get spread as well, and people follow you. If you just post cat photos all day long, well, you know, you could turn that into Reddit, I guess.
There's a certain community that might like that.
There's a lot of people who like cat photos, but I'm not after them. I'm after the people who like tech, you know.
A few weeks ago, I was invited into a TV show to advise them on how to make a viral video.
Yeah.
And so I said, cats, it's always a good idea. And the host, he said, I think I'm going to make one about an Excel cat, a cat working on a spreadsheet. We've never seen that before.
That might go. Yeah, there's some things that you can do to try to make a video, but it comes down to good content.
And what do you do to give your followers value?
I go around and interview executives who are building the future, right? So for me, that's pretty easy to figure out. I could not figure out how to make a cat video go viral, even if I
It didn't go viral, trust me.
You know, first of all, most things that go viral sort of almost by accident. They're black swans, you know, things that are just going to happen once. They're not repeatable, and I'm looking for something that I can repeat and build a club with and talk with people about. I'm always commenting on other people's posts. And
so if you were to recommend one app that you really like right now that you have on your phone, which phone do you have and which app do you really like?
Well, I have a Moto X and an iPhone, but I'm carrying an iPhone here in Paris. And I, you know, the problem is, you know, like I just posted Facebook that my Uber driver loves Waze, and I love Waze, but you can tell very few people out of society use Waze. You can look at the map and see, you'll see 1,000 people using it here in Paris, but how many people are in Paris? Million? You know?
What does that do?
Waze lets you just see the traffic in a new way, and it reroutes you around traffic in a very efficient way. Google bought it for $1.3 billion this last year. So Google saw some value in it. But this is the problem with talking about apps. There's so many people who haven't even tried the apps that I've been using for 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, you add on new ones. Like I just got a Heyday, which shows your photo roll in a new way. And it's really pretty. It's really beautiful. And it groups photos together in a new way and shows me my photo roll in a nice new way. And then I have this new thing called Revolve. So at my house, I have a little Revolve unit, and it's a new kind of home automation system. So I can turn on and off my lights. I can turn down my Nest thermostat. I can see a motion capture and some pictures off of a camera. Do a whole bunch of home automation stuff without being a rocket scientist. So it's a lot easier to do home automation and a lot cheaper than it has been in the past. It still is somewhat expensive because you have to buy a Nest thermostat, and that's $300, and the Revolve thing is $300, and then you know, lights are $200 with the internet built into the lights. So, but it's fun to play with, right? And this is sort of where I'm going with the future. And then we got, you know, the usual social media stuff and the usual find food to eat tonight, you know, because I'm a foodie and I like going to great, so I have Food Spotting and Vivino and Delectable for wine. And
Vivino is actually a Danish app.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that our audience will be happy to hear that you're using
it. It's a great app, and they're doing really well. They're getting, like, the guy who runs it wrote me and said, I forget the numbers, but it was hundreds of thousands every week, and it's doing really well.
I see that you have Snapchat. Do you use it, and what do you think?
You know, Snapchat is for when you want to send somebody and not have it permanent, have the message go away, and for kids, that's really important. For lovers, maybe. I don't tend to care about that kind of messaging, so I think I'm too old for it.
Thank you very much, Robert Scoble. Thank you for talking to us today at LaWeb.
Thank you very much.
Morten Saxnes, vi er lige præcis midt i konferencen her ved frokosttid på anden dagen. Hvad er din ambition for resten af tiden her?
Jeg skal ud og møde en masse mennesker. Jeg har legnet en masse møder op med interessante folk fra startup-virksomheder, der forhåbentlig kan inspirere mig. Og så skal jeg høre nogle gode talks om fremtidens tv. Så det glæder mig til.
Ja, det bliver i morgen, vi kommer til at snakke fremtidens tv. Jeg glæder mig til paneldebatten senere om kvinder i tech. Og så er det jo bare, hver eneste tale, der er på den der store scene, er jo bare et guldkorn fra nogen, man følger og synes er fantastisk. Så jeg skal prøve at Shanghai nogle flere. Det er ikke afslutningen på Elektronistas dækning af LaWeb, vi sender næste halvdel i næste uge med dem, som jeg når at fange resten af dagen og i morgen. hvis du synes, at interviews, at de interviews, du har hørt med de her forskellige internetstjerner, er interessante og godt kunne tænke dig at høre mere, så kan du gå ind på Radio 24/7's hjemmeside, for der har vi nemlig sørget for, at de ligger i deres fulde, helt rå længde, men der er altså er masser af fede ting med både Guy Kawasaki, Omar Malik, Robert Scoble og Phil Lippin fra Evernote. Det var Elektronister i Paris for i dag. Mit navn er Christiane Vejlø. Følg os på Twitter, hvor vi hedder Elektronister Lyd, og følg os hver søndag på Radio 24/7, hvor vi sender programmet kl. 12. Programmet her var produceret af Ninette Birk.